This is the Top Agents Playbook podcast, episode 21.
I'm Michael Spillane, and welcome to the Top Agents Playbook podcast.
Well, hi, everybody, and welcome back to the show. I recently had the opportunity to catch up with top agent Michael Spillane. A little time back, Michael left a great paying job to help out a friend. Part of what they did involved property, so Michael made the decision then and there to get his real estate license. In his first year, he made just $19,000. This year, Michael will earn more than $1.5 million in commission and runs a team of four. Michael's journey from rookie agent to elite performer happened because he looked at what real estate's best were doing to achieve and maintain dominant market share, which is pretty much the same thing as you're doing now by listening to this podcast and checking out the show notes at topagentsplaybook.com/21. When you listen to this episode with Michael, you'll get some great insight into the work ethic of a top agent. His habits and personal rules are largely responsible for his success, as you'll see. You'll also discover how Michael maintains his business growth without prospecting, his dynamic and powerful point of difference that attracts sellers like ants to honey, how Michael has overcome the two major setbacks in his life, how to get out of a sales slump, and what every rookie needs to do for their first 2 years in real estate. I know you'll get plenty of excellent takeaway ideas in this interview with Michael, and as usual, I want to thank Locked On for being the show's sponsor. If you're ready to get more out of every day with real estate's best software, go to the resources page at topagentsplaybook.com and you'll be able to click on the link to get a free 30-day trial and a discount for life as a listener to this podcast. And with just a couple of months to go, ticket sales for Recharge, our live coaching real estate event on the Gold Coast, are really starting to pick up. Check out our speaker lineup today at recharge2015.com. Well, hi, everybody, and welcome back to the show. I'm with Michael Spillane from RE/MAX Northern Realty in Brisbane. G'day, Michael.
G'day, Ray. How are you going?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing well, thank you.
Michael, can we start at the start? When did you get into real estate? I know I want to talk about your numbers in a sec. You're super successful, but how did you get into real estate?
I got into real estate in a very backwards way, Ray, to be honest with you. I did not get into real estate like probably 99.9% of people. I was working in the Brisbane casino at the time, and I wanted out. I really had enough of that, and I wanted to do something. I didn't know what I wanted to do, and a friend of mine started a franchise for a trade company similar to Bartercard. It wasn't Bartercard. It was another company.
Right.
And I just said to him, look, do you want a hand? I started with him, and an element of that business was to, source properties for members who've got a lot of trade dollars to purchase properties with part cash, part trade dollars. So someone had to go and get a real estate salesperson certificate. I think it was one of those scenarios where my friend said, all right, who wants to do it? Everyone else took a step backwards and I didn't, so it was me. So I went and got my real estate salesperson certificate, I think in 2000. Back then you had to answer 20 multi-choice questions.
Right.
And I was good at remembering numbers, so I ripped through that in about 35 seconds. I got 100%, knew nothing about real estate.
Right.
I mean, nothing whatsoever. Next thing you know, I got a certificate and off I went. So the first period of time was sourcing properties, mainly development stock for clients with trade dollars. That's a pretty tough sell.
Yep.
The market in 2000 wasn't great in Brisbane. It was just starting to pick up. The Act had just been overhauled. There was a few things going on. And it was a really tough ride, to be honest with you. I think in the first 12 months I made $19,000 in
right.
the first 12 months, probably spent about 45.
So you would have taken a big hit from the casino casino salary, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah, I was. Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Big time. It was, I guess quite a leap of faith when I look back on it. And then, of course, the market kicked off in the year 2001. Things started really booming in Brisbane. So, what I was doing was really tough because people – who couldn't sell their homes all of a sudden were selling them, so they didn't have to accept trade dollars. So I sort of was really struggling, and it was nothing unusual for me to make 400 or 500 cold calls in a week. And, if I ever got one hit, You know, it was pay time. You know, right. I remember, and we'd have clients lined up. It was quite unusual, really, when I think about it, because I got one development in the city. I remember that really well, and I think we sold 40 units by the time I listed them, 40 units in about 3 hours. You know, where clients pay a proportion in trade dollars and the rest in cash. So it's feast or famine in the very best way. But I knew that sort of industry had cobwebs on it. The market was kicking, and I did a bit of a deal with a guy who owned, at the time, Brisbane's largest independent company, and he was consistently asking me out to lunch, trying to get me on board. And I started with him.
Real estate agency, are you talking
real
about?
Real estate agent, yeah.
Yep.
So,
okay.
So it was traditional real estate, so I got in with him. He, finally, after I had lunch with him a number of times, I just went for the free lunch because I couldn't afford it on myself, I think. But after a while, I saw some of his agents were just writing phenomenal volumes, and the lights sort of went on for me. So I started with him, and look, you know, through a long story, I started my own company and then sort of mainly dealing in resales in the city, which was great. We built that up to 25 agents, I think, within about 12 months, so we were busy. I was wearing myself pretty thin, and then I scaled that down into a sort of a prestige company, and then I ended up doing a bit of project marketing, some top-end project marketing. I sort of jumped into bed with a guy who ran an independent project marketing company at the time, and anyway, that sort of wasn't going the way I wanted to, so next thing you know, I was managing three franchises for a guy I knew through a friend and still know today. Still talk to him fairly regularly, and decided after being out of sales for about 6 or 7 years that I really missed the sort of the thrill of the chase, and figured out that that's probably where the money was, actually, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So I got back into sales in 2008, 2009, and that sort of led me to Remax, and here I am. I've been at Remax now for approaching 5.5 years.
Yeah. Did you ever think you're on target to do, I think, $1.5 million in commission this year? Did you ever think back then that you'd be a $1 million performer? Was that your ambition?
Oh, I've never had an ambition, to be honest with you. To, you know, the tag of a $1 million performer never was a driver for me at all. It was more just, you know, to make money.
Yep.
I didn't really care whether I ranked number one or number 100,001, if you know what I mean. It was always just to set myself up financially. I mean, I'm competitive by nature. I love that side of it, but it's not my sole driver. So, look, I guess I got to the point in 2008, when I got back into sales, I'd worked with a lot of really good salespeople. Some of them I'd bought in myself and trained, and they went on to do great things, open their own businesses. Because I'd worked with a lot of top performers all around Brisbane, I was starting to compile mentally the DNA of a super salesperson, I think.
Yep.
You know, I'd sort of go, yep, I love the way he does that, or I love the way she does that, or, you know, that's what I would do, or I'd take that idea and do this. So, I was busting at the seams to get out and apply, to be honest with you, because I always thought at that time – I reckon I'd know what to do and how to handle it, and I guess that's probably part of my success. I'd love to say it's all my own brilliance. It's not. It's just that I've been able to take different things from different agents. You know, I've never been an agent who's been stationed in one area and just stayed there and built a reputation up. I've moved around for such a long period of time.
Yeah.
And now I've been in the same place. So I've been in the same area, I suppose, since the start of 2007. So, you know, about 8.5 years, but I've only really been selling in this area for about sort of 6.5, I guess. So yeah. I, in some ways, I still feel new. You know, I still feel like I've got a lot, you know, I've haven't really started. I've still got a lot of things on my project list that I want to do that I've never even done. So, you know, it's funny, but a lot of the growth came fairly quickly, and people would say to me, oh, you know, you jumped out of the ground. But the truth is it was probably built on 10 years of, you know, learning and ups and downs and roller coasters and pain and suffering and all sorts of things in the process. So
for sure. And the last, yep. The last, I guess, what, 6, 7, 8 years has been a dream run in real estate, pretty much.
Yeah, it has. Brisbane's been fairly unique since the GFC. You know, yep. Brisbane's been the one capital city, as you know, that really hasn't kicked on. We're at the best point of the market, I think, now than we are since probably about 2008.
Okay.
2009, I think, anyway. I'm hearing that from a lot of agents. So, yeah, Brisbane hasn't experienced anywhere near the growth of Sydney or Melbourne or, you know, even some of the other capital cities. So, you know, our market, I think we've still got a way to go. But yeah, it's we're enjoying the ride, I guess, at the moment.
Michael, did you have a mentor back in the day when you started? Where did you get the ideas from? I mean, you mentioned before you were cold calling. Yep. How did you learn?
Look, I didn't, to be honest. I didn't have a mentor. I doing what I was doing, I really had no guidance. And back then in 2000, there was not the great array of trainers and coaches and, you know, the online library and all that sort of thing. It just didn't exist. So yep. I floundered about for a while. You know, I guess the mentor, the first half-decent mentor I suppose I had was the principal of the business that I went to, the independent company, and I learned a lot there, and I learned a lot of fall sales. I mean, everyone was my mentor because I was pretty hopeless, to be honest with you. So, you know, I guess I just took ideas. I won't say I ever had one particular mentor. When I had my own company, I had coaches and trainers come in. I outsourced people. I had a guy from was very successful in the insurance industry come in just to look at different ideas we could implement. So I won't say I've ever really had one coach or mentor. And you know, potentially that could be holding me back too. I'm now, you know, I got into sales, I had a list of things I wanted to do, and I wanted to put the blinkers on and just apply those. I didn't need any new ideas.
Yep.
In the last 6 months, I've sort of probably changed my tack there a little bit. I'm really now seeking other top performing agents in Australia. I'm going to visit them. I'm talking to them on the phone. I'm finding out what they're doing. And that's been refreshing for me just to get some new ideas and try to take my business to the next level. So, you know, we've had a couple of good years, but you know, let me tell you, I've hung out. I just spent a little bit of time with Marcus Kimonello from Marshall Watt in Melbourne and that opened my eyes up. I can tell you, I am absolutely a junior compared to him and how he runs his business and the numbers that he writes and that sort of thing. He's phenomenal. So, you know, I've got a long way to go yet.
It's interesting that somebody listening to this will be modelling their success from what you're doing and then you're doing the same thing at a higher level as well. So you're setting a pretty good example. And one of the things that I really enjoy about doing this podcast and these episodes and these sessions is that I do give everybody in real estate the opportunity to kind of get up close and personal and learn from you know, $1 million plus performer like yourself. So I think that's really refreshing, and it's certainly you know, I love speaking to top performers, and I love sharing the information. So it's interesting that you're doing the same thing. Tell me, as far as you'll do over 100 sales this year and well over 100 listings. Your personal motivation, it hasn't even gone 8 o'clock, I don't think, yet. You're at the office an hour ago. What time do you start in the morning?
Look, it really depends. I certainly used to be a workaholic, no question about that. I've probably changed my tact a little bit now. You know, I've got a little 5-year-old daughter, and I like to spend time with her. I get a bit more R&R than I used to. So, for instance, a Wednesday, as an example, I'm normally in the office by about 4 a.m.
Right.
That's my particularly early day. But in saying that, I knock off at 2 o'clock and spend the afternoon and the evening with her. So I sort of, in some ways, I consider myself a shift worker of sorts at times. I've got a great team around me, and that's a big thing. You know, that takes a lot of the pressure off me, and I've been working on building up to that for a period of time so that I can just pull back a little bit.
Yep.
I probably do, you know, 5.5 days a week now, to be honest with you. Some days are bigger than others. You know, it's if I need to, I've always been lucky enough that I can put my foot to the floor, and I've had a fairly big engine, I guess. I can just sort of keep going and going, and, you know, if I need to, I can, you know, live off only a few hours sleep and get up and do it again. Recently I had 2 staff personal staff of 4, but I had 2 staff off on holidays, and we just got real busy. So, you know, it was kind of all hands on deck for the 3 of us, and I worked like a bit of a maniac then, but, you know, since then I've probably taken my foot off the pedal a bit. So, yeah, it's I think that's part of the challenge of any agent is to be able to set up an environment that is conducive to a reasonable work-life balance. And again, I'm moving in the right direction, but I've still got a distance to go there.
Yeah, I've been. It's interesting you say that. I've been having a look at a book by a guy called Hal Elrod, and I'll post this into the show notes under this series. Or under this podcast, but he wrote a book called The Miracle Morning, and I've just found it quite enlightening, actually. You know, what the sort of stuff that you can get done even before the sun comes up, yep. And me being in another time zone to a lot of my agent clients in Australia and New Zealand, it certainly helps to get an early start. You mentioned your team. Can you tell me about your team? How many you've got? What are the different roles? How does that work?
Yeah, I've got the way I've structured my team now, I've got a personal assistant, Brooke, who has been with me for about 2.5 years now, moving on to 2.5 years. She's fantastic. You know, she's really good. She organises me. You know, she puts me in my place. She's not scared to do that, which is a good thing. I think having a PA that's, you know, able to see beyond what you're seeing because your head's buried in it is really beneficial. I guess she's really my EA, you know, if you want to call it that. I've got two staff, Kelly and Simon, who I guess are more sort of sales support. You know, they'll come with me to listing appointments. I generally, you know, when we do a listing appointment or an appraisal, we generally go in pairs. You know, they'll run inspections, they'll do valuations, building and pests, you know, whatever needs to be done. And then I've got a young guy, Evan, who his intention is to move into sales. He does a little bit of that sort of stuff as well. He's a bit of a genius IT guy and a very good graphics guy. So I've got him doing a whole bunch of stuff there at the moment. He's a bit of an all-rounder, I guess.
Nice.
And I've actually just recently put a guy on who I've known for many years, a gentleman called Greg Wong, who's I've put him on, and he's sort of an agent in my team in his own right. He speaks six languages, Asian languages, six dialects. So,
wow.
Not that we have that sort of population in this general area, but you know, it just fit really well that I had an infrastructure that worked for him, and he's coming to my team, and he's really sort of coming into his own just in the last month, to be honest with you. He's starting to write some really good volume. So he pretty much floats around, does his own thing. So, yeah, that's my team.
Okay. What about – talk to me about client care and how you look after your clients and how you reach out to them. How do you connect? Because I guess that's central to your prospecting. You would have probably learned a little bit from Marcus as to what he does in Melbourne.
Yeah, I did. Look, one thing I can say about Marcus, after spending a day with Marcus, before I went down, if you said to me, what do you give yourself for time management, I would have said 8 out of 10. After hanging out with Marcus for a day, I probably would have given myself about a 4 out of 10, to be honest with you. He's
yep.
incredible.
Yep.
He does not waste 30 seconds of his day, and I really mean that. He's unbelievable. In terms of how I connect with clients, you know, that's another thing I got out of him more than anything else. It's just, you know, being constantly on the phone, to be honest with you. You know, one thing about Marcus is every opportunity he's got to ring someone, he does. You know, he's pulling up to an inspection or a listing appointment. He manages to cram one more call in, one more call. He's very good at that.
Yeah.
And you know, to be honest with you, it's nothing more than that. I'm not an IT genius. I don't have any great or wonderful systems. I've got some very good systems that I've developed over a long period of time. A lot of them are just pen and paper. You know, I don't have a lot of automation in my business, which I'm working on. But you know, I generally speaking, I run a newsletter a week, which is you know, different to what most agents do, I suppose, and that's been a really good thing for me. But other than that, it's just been pretty consistent on phone, particularly email as well, but more so the phone.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. We were talking just before I press record, and we were talking about your numbers, and you said you had some setbacks last year. I'd love to know a little bit more. I'd love you to share a little bit more. Tell us what you feel like telling us. I guess I'll leave it up to you. But I'm probably interested to learn how a performer at your level recovers after a setback, because not a lot of people in real estate can, I notice.
Yeah. Well, I've had two major setbacks in my career, to be honest with you. They were both as big as each other. In when I built a company up, I had a partner, and that fell apart back in 2004 or 2005, and cost me a lot of money. And I think the mistake I made back then is I was very trusting of people, if yep. I can say that.
Yeah.
So that really put me in a hole for a good period of time, and took a lot for me to get out. You know, both mentally, financially, the whole bit. I think at the time what I learnt then is I really suffered because I wasn't selling myself. So when I really needed to rely on income because I was managing a business, you know, I had nothing to really sort of fall back on.
You were vulnerable.
Very much so. Yeah, I was quite naive when I look back on it as to some of the decisions I made. But anyway, it's you know, on we move. And then about 2 years ago, I had a separation, so you know that was difficult for me. It was
of course.
I think it was on the cards for a long time, without sort of going into too much detail there. So you know, I guess I sort of buried myself in work for a while, and I kept myself busy, you know, coming out of that. But yeah, you know, I've seen a lot. You know, as a real estate agent, you see it with clients all the time. It seems to affect men, I've noticed, a lot more than it affects women. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way to women, but men just seem to be floored by it. So yeah, it hasn't been easy, but onwards and upwards. You know, I look at it and think, you know what, I've had two massive, you know, moments or challenges or events, and I've been resilient through both of those things. So, you know, things can only get better. I still look at it and I think I've got quite a way to go before I really hit my potential. That's what I believe.
Yeah, and all power to you. It's difficult to overcome smaller setbacks. And you were telling me the number of sales you had last year. It was up around the 25 or 30% mark that didn't go through for some reason or another. That's pretty soul destroying.
Yeah, it is. We actually we had a period where up here, you know, the standard Queens, I know it's a bit different down south, but up here a client would normally sign a contract and then make it subject to a building and pest inspection. And then the building and pest inspection would be done, and then, you know, the clients would decide whether they want to continue with the property. And we just had a lot of properties where, and I think in that industry, building and pest inspectors, you know, they have to put more in reports to cover themselves these days for litigation, all sorts of things. And a lot of the properties we had really didn't have much wrong with them, but we just got on a really unlucky run. I think at one point, I think we wrote 24 contracts in a row and 17 of them crashed.
Whoa.
We just couldn't take a trick. One or two on finance, but mainly it was building and pest, and a few other reasons, a few bizarre reasons here and there about, you know, something came up in a council search, or I had a couple of people who, lost businesses in the course of, you know, between signing a contract and settling one, and all sorts of things. We just had an excruciatingly unlucky run. So I did think it was cursed for a little while there. But that's real estate. You know, the truth is the year before, the last quarter went through and everything just sailed through sweetly. And I remember just thinking to myself, gee, how easy is this? You know, we lost two contracts, I remember, in the last quarter the year before, and I sold both of those in a heartbeat straight after, and everything just went straight through nice and easy. So I think you go on those runs. I've seen agents quit the industry when they have, you know, two or three contracts fall over. So All you can do is plough through it. You know, funny enough, I was in Fiji, I mentioned it the last few days. On the Sunday, we wrote three sales. On Monday, we lost two others. You know, and look, there's things that we do to try to protect that, and I generally think that I've got some pretty good systems around that sort of thing happening. But you know what? Sometimes you can only control so much. So you know, my strategy there is let's just throw more mud on the wall, and eventually some of it's got to stick, I guess.
One of the great things about selling property by auction in Melbourne and Sydney and anywhere, I guess, when you sell by auction, is that it's unconditional.
Yes.
The buyer has to do all of that beforehand. So, you know, we've talked about Marcus Cibinello in this call and those other guys in Melbourne and Sydney that are doing so well at auction. You've got to be a little bit jealous of that, because they've just got, you know, they know when they get a signature on their contract and a deposit, that it's unconditional, which is attractive.
Yeah, and that's true. You know, we're in an area that's about 14K northwest of the CBD, so it's a lot of I guess we get a fair bit of first home buyers and investors and that sort of thing. And traditionally in this area, it's horses for courses, but auctions just don't work as well. We auction some properties.
Yep.
I get a bit of stuff from some mortgagees and that sort of thing, which sort of has to be auctioned. The truth is, one thing, a point of business I've really built my whole business on, which is part of my ethos and philosophy, is really getting the highest price for people. And in a number of instances in this area, I'm not bagging auctions, don't get me wrong, but auction I don't think is the best way necessarily on every property to get the highest price for a seller.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, it's I think this is where local knowledge and expertise takes over, and you're hired as a pro to make a decision and advise your client accordingly. And I'd assume that you'd choose whichever method you're comfortable with and is less risk and the biggest chance for upside for your seller. So any one of us listening would do the same thing. Some of the better agents, just rewinding a sec to the sales falling over, because I just made a note here, it made me think. Some of the better agents that I've known over time are in areas where they know there's a chance that something could happen. I've heard it referenced as, what's the terminology, setting it up to crash. So they will put a contract together and there will be conditions, building and pest or whatever it might be, and they'll say to the buyer, you know what, you may not get a 100% perfect scorecard on this, and chances are something could come back. When that happens, you probably need to make a judgment call as to whether you want to pursue it or not, but I'm just giving you the heads up that it's probably going to happen. And it just seemed to kind of briefing the seller, the buyer, and getting them prepared kind of softened the blow a little bit, and the guys that I speak to say that it plays a hand in getting deals through. Do you ever feel the need to do anything like that?
Yeah, we do. We like to think we set it up pretty well. The sort of numbers you've reminded me of may not necessarily correlate to that being the case, but
particularly bad year, in fairness.
Yeah, it was. You know, it absolutely was. But you know, the truth of the matter is, I think when you're growing, and you've got, you know, I'm lucky. I've got some very experienced staff, but sometimes they don't do things the way I do if you take them on with experience, or they might be a little inexperienced in certain areas. So, you know, there's a little bit of give in there. I think there's a bit more learning for the team, and you know, we probably learnt some tough lessons. In saying that, I honestly do believe we had a pretty unlucky run at the same point in time. So, you know, it happens. You know, that's part and parcel of it. I know I'm not Robinson Crusoe in that regard. I've, you know, speak to a lot of agents, and it's the same sort of thing. You know, there's a lot more fall over rate than what they used to have. So it's part and parcel of it. But yeah, it's good advice that you give as well. You do need to set it up. I'm a firm believer of that.
Yeah, let your buyers know that all mightn't be as they hoped. Michael, let me ask you a pretty simple question, but one that I'm sure everybody listening is keen to know. What's the key to your success? How do you do the numbers you do, if you had to quantify it in a few points?
Well, it's a good question. Look, to be honest with you, I've always just tried to be different. I've tried to just be an agent that stands out a little bit as being, you know, probably left of centre at times. But, you know, I guess my theory's always been, if the fish are swimming this way, then I want to swim the other way.
Yep. Zig when they zag.
Yeah, I don't even necessarily care if that's, you know, if that's the right direction at times either. I've tried to, I guess, just be unique in everything. The way we market properties, the way I market myself, the way we do things. I've always just tried to stand out and be a bit of a trailblazer in whatever I can do. I'm always trying to look for the next niche. I never want to do what other agents are doing. And I've had times when, you know, I've been doing things and next thing everyone's doing them, and not that, you know, I'm the innovator necessarily, but I've sort of thought, okay, well, now it's time to change tact again. So, you know, a lot of it is really, you know, if I look back, I've built a reputation on really getting the highest price for a seller, and I can prove that beyond a shadow of a doubt. And I think that's important. I'm a firm believer these days that data is readily available to everyone out there.
Yes.
As agents, we used to be the gatekeepers of data. We are not the gatekeepers of data anymore. And people know, you know, they can get online very quickly and know all the sales in the area, what they sold for, who sold them.
Yep.
And, you know, we don't really prospect, to be honest with you. We've done a little bit more of it lately because stock's getting a bit tight. But for about 4 or 5 years in a row, we call back our open home calls, but we didn't actually prospect at all. We did no calling other than people who rang us. We did no door knocking. We didn't do anything. So we just marketed ourselves very well, and I guess marketed our results quite well. And I think that holds me in good stead. You know, we constantly get calls. Even yesterday, you know, I got two calls from people. I got a call from someone and I sold one in this particular complex. It was a unit and said, look, you got the highest price in here by a mile. Come and talk to us. I had another call from someone who said, look, you just sold my friend's place. I know you got a top dollar for it. They were raving about you. Come and talk to me about mine. So, you know, that's the sort of reputation we've been built on. I've mentioned before in a little bit of the training I've done, I'd actually rather not sell a home and not get paid than to sell it for a poor price.
Yep.
And still earn a commission. I really think that your results are a billboard out there, and you know, you're judged by that.
You can be guaranteed that that's the one thing that your seller and other owners in the area are going to talk about.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely, they are. And it's so easy to get data these days. So yeah, that's been a big thing for me.
Yeah. Michael, if I was say you agreed to have lunch with me next week for a day. Say next Wednesday, I said, Michael, I'd love to pick your brain and buy you lunch. We go for lunch and I say to you, look, I'm in real estate. I love real estate, but I'm really struggling. I'm not getting anywhere near my goals. I'm not listing the properties that I need to list. I'm not getting the sales. I'm not getting in to do listing presentations, etc. What would be your advice to me?
Oh, look, I do get a few of those sort of calls every now and then. I think it's a number of things. I think first and foremost, if I was sitting down with you, I'd be trying to figure out where you're at mentally.
Right.
Because if you're not getting the listings, you know, and it comes down to, are you getting into doors? If you're getting into a lot of doors and you're just not getting the listings, then it's, you know, it's obviously something in your picture. It's a conversion issue. If you're just not getting into doors full stop, you know, I'd look at it. You know, how you're marketing yourself, what are you doing? I honestly think some agents just expect that because they're in the area that they deserve to be called into, you know, listings.
Yeah,
and that's
sure.
Very much not the case. But yeah. you've got to be at least mentally ready for it. And you know, it's like I think too, and I know I get caught in this trap at times as well. You know, you're on a roll, you're getting called into everything. You know, you're listing properties like they're going out of fashion, and it seeps out of your skin. You know, you go into listings and not in an arrogant way, but you've sort of got the attitude, look, I think I'm good for you. I think I'm the right person to list and sell your home for you. I know I'm going to get you the best price, but you know what, if you don't pick me, I don't really care.
Yeah.
That's up to you. And I think, I think at times, you know, people really get a sense of that. Whereas, you know, if I'd done 2 appraisals in the last month, and I've got, you know, I'm carrying 2 listings and I go in there, I'm going to probably pander over them a little bit. I'm going to be very delicate with them and they'll get a sense that, you know, he really needs me.
Yeah.
This agent really needs my listing. And then, of course, you miss it. So, you know, you've really got to work on your mental game before you're getting into doors, I suppose. And that's the first thing I would pull apart is I've noticed that when – you know, agents are emotional creatures. It's a tough game. Real estate's a really tough game.
Yep.
So I wouldn't like to be starting today. You know, it's hard work out there.
Yeah.
So you've got to be mentally ready for it. And if you're defeated, then it's a hard road from there. You've got to really get yourself in the right state. I'm a firm believer of that.
It's almost like your potential client can smell it. Like a dog can smell fear.
Absolutely.
They can see that you're lacking in that confidence. So. Because I think it's interesting you say that, because I think that's a huge point and a huge challenge facing so many new people in real estate in their first 6 or 12 months.
Yep.
And my advice on that is get as much training as you can, get yourself a mentor, and do some role playing.
Yep. Look, I'm of the belief honestly that it's it and you're right, everything you say is correct, but you know, I've always thought it's not a 6 month run in real estate, it's 2 years.
Yeah.
And you've got to be ready to pretty much sell your soul for 2 years. That's the truth. There's no sugarcoating it. Yeah. There's no flaring it up. There's no question that if you've got a bit of cash behind you and you want to market yourself and get yourself out there, that's going to give you a distinct advantage. When I started, I really had no money. So I didn't spend one penny on marketing, not a cent. All I did was cold call, mainly cold call and a bit of door knocking, but cold calls more than anything because that's all I knew how to do. That's all I could afford at the time. So, you know, if that's what it is for you, then that's what it is. But I just notice that people get in the industry and they expect big results fairly quickly, and there's probably very few markets in the entire country where there's not, you know, one or many dominant agents who are getting results, and you've got to break into that. So it's not easy, and you've got to be ready. You know, you've got to be mentally prepared that this is a 2 year slog. It's a battle. You know, and I'm not saying that skill doesn't play a role in it training and that sort of thing. Absolutely, it does. But I tend to think people put, you know, they work hard for a month or two and they expect to go and list 10 properties and then wonder why they're not listing them. And they need a bit of reality check.
Yeah, and they give up.
Yep. And usually they give up. They smash the wall with a sledgehammer and smash it and smash it and smash it. And as you know, they give up usually about one hit before the wall falls over. So, yep, very true.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to let you go. Final question. Who are your heroes?
Oh, look, I've got probably many heroes in all walks of life, to be honest with you. I won't say probably more than anything, my heroes are really my parents.
Yep.
You know, I came from a very middle-class upbringing, I suppose, but it was one with great stability. I got a great education and I was never given a handout by my parents. You know, I had to go and create my own niche in the world. But I look back on my childhood and look on that very fondly, and I think that's set me up well. You know, other than that, I won't say I've necessarily got heroes. Heroes is a strong word. There's a lot of people I respect and look up to.
Yep.
But I am of the belief too that. I think in real estate, if you model yourself on any one person, you know, your area is unique, it's different, and there's things that I know I've taken from top performers. Like I hung out with Marcus Ciminello, I mentioned that,
yeah.
Mentioned him a couple of times. Now, you know, he's in a very top-end market. If I tried to model myself and do everything he does, it's not going to work in my area because he's in a different area. He's in a different market, you know, different clients. He opens properties from start to finish on a Wednesday and a Thursday. That doesn't work in my area. It won't because too many people are working during those times.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm of the belief that I've always looked at training, mentors, everything is a big smorgasbord, and I think you've got to take out of it what's relevant to you. If I'm always of the belief if I can go to a training seminar or anything and take one good idea out or one little thing I can change, then that's great and then sort of filter the rest. So, you know, I won't say I've got any great heroes. I love sport. I've always been right into sports. I've got a lot of sporting people that I guess I've followed over the years and read a lot of autobiographies and that sort of thing. No one stinks out to me, to be honest with you. But again, I just try to take a little bit from everyone.
How are the Brisbane Lions going anyway?
Yeah, look, I'm not a big AFL follower. I know for a fact, though. I keep my hand on everything. The Lions are. I'm not going flash. I'm not a big Broncos fan. I support the Eels,
right.
As sad as that is.
Okay.
And the poor old Eels aren't doing too flash either. I started supporting the Roar, the Brisbane Roar. They obviously had a role, but they probably had a season they'd rather forget as well. Queensland didn't win the Origin the other night. I'm struggling at the moment. I don't know, the Queensland Marbles team maybe. I think the Queensland Firebirds are in the final. The netball team, I'll try to jump on their bandwagon. I don't know. Cricketers aren't doing that good. So,
there's normally Queenslanders in sport doing pretty well somewhere. So
there is. We'll be back. Don't worry about that.
Well, buddy, I just wanted to say thank you. You're a huge influence to thousands of agents right throughout Australia and New Zealand. And now in Canada and the US when this podcast gets out to my market here. So I want to say thank you. And when I sent you a message and said, could you do the podcast? You said, yeah, no worries. We made a time, and you jumped straight back at me. And I just want to say thank you for that. You're very genuine. And I think that comes out when we hear you speak. So thank you so much. Thanks for your time. And I look forward to talking to you shortly.
No worries. Thanks, Ray. I appreciate you having me.
Cheers, Michael.
Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Top Agents Playbook podcast. For show notes from this episode, recent podcasts, and lots more, go to topagentsplaybook.com.